Class. Class of 89.
Say hi, motherfucker!
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 89 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turned 30 this year. I'm Natasha Pacetta, your host and vanguard of the vault over here at Fangoria, and this is our second installment of our series on Leviathan. Our guest today is legendary creature performer and creator Tom Woodruff Jr. Join Tom as he hilariously looks back at his time performing as the humanoid fish creature in Leviathan. Tom explains why it is the worst creature suit he's ever performed in, his lonely perspective from being held captive inside the suit in a tank in Malta, killing Ernie Hudson on screen, his best Peter Weller impression, and much more. Before we get to Tom's stories, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. Fangoria Magazine has never been better. With your subscription, you'll get a full year of the deluxe 100-page quarterly edition shipped straight to your door. You'll see familiar names like Fango veterans Michael Gene Gold and Tony Timpone, and bylines like Barbara Crampton and S. Craig Zoller. Go to Fangoria.com and use my promo code CLASSOF for 15% off your first year of frights. That's Fangoria.com, promo code CLASSOF. And since this is a creature-centric episode, it's only fitting that I tell you about Crawl. Crawl is out now on digital. Sink your teeth into this year's most intense horror film that critics are calling entertaining as hell. Producer Sam Raimi, the horror mastermind behind Don't Breathe and the Evil Dead movies, teams up with director Alexander Aja of The Hills Have Eyes to bring you this relentless, nerve-rattling creature feature. Crawl combines your most primal human fears, confined spaces, fear of drowning, and an onslaught of could-be-anywhere alligators. Certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, get this action-packed thriller with a nasty bite on digital today. Rated R from Paramount Pictures. Now let's get to Tom's stories from the making of Leviathan. So you are the man inside the monster. You brought life to Pumpkinhead, Alien, the Gill Man from Monster Squad, and many, many more, including the main creature in George Cosmatos' Leviathan. And we'll get to that creature in detail in a second. But I wanted to start at the beginning. Do you remember your initial reaction to the script?
Well, yeah. I mean, more or less. It's been 30 years.
Yeah, it's been 30 years.
30 years. It was funny because, let's see, 30 years. So I don't know why Stan didn't do The Abyss. I'd say that right up front. I don't know. I have no guesses. I haven't heard any reasons. I don't know. It didn't seem like a big deal to me at the time. You know, I didn't question it. But I remember two scripts came in, and one was Leviathan, and the other was this other underwater creature movie called Deep Star 6.
Right.
And I read them both. And I liked Deep Star 6 better, just from the point of view of who I was at the time, you know, working for Stan, making monsters, wearing creature suits. So I thought Deep Star 6 was cooler because there seemed to be more monster to it. You know, he seemed to be around more often. He seemed to be more of a presence than in Leviathan, where he was, you know, we did see him eventually, but there was a lot of kind of spooky buildup and stuff where we didn't really see him, which in the end I ended up liking more. But now the thing for me, the coolness meter kind of pegged when Peter Weller joined the cast. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't just Peter Weller and Danny Stern, who I loved ever since I first saw him in Blue Thunder, Lisa Auerbacher from Beverly Hills Cop. I mean, it was really cool people to be involved with. So I feel in the end, I was happy with the decision, you know, Stan made to do the Cosmatos film. I know of Cosmatos' work. I guess it was mostly Cobra, right? I'd seen Cobra. I think that came out right around the same time. And Rambo, that's right. Rambo was cool. And then looking up more information on him, I was surprised that back in the, I think it was back in the 70s, he had done this movie. I didn't know he'd done it, called The Cassandra Crossing. And I talked to him about it. Because, you check it out, because I don't know how well the film holds up, but I remember this very cool effect where there's this train crash and there's this guy sitting in the train, a passenger seat, and a piece of girder comes through him from the front or the back. But it was just very shocking because it was a real guy sitting there and obviously a fake torso, and this thing was loaded, and it was really really startling, you know, at the time, because there wasn't a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I don't know of that one. I know one that I really liked by George Cosmatos and Peter Weller was of unknown origin too. Rat story was really kind of creepy. I really enjoy Leviathan. I think you're right. You don't get to see a lot of the creature until, you know, towards the end. Well, let's talk about the logistics of this creature. Let's get into the creature. So you were the performer inside the creature, but I know there's a lot that goes into these crazy big creatures. Can you walk us through how it all operated, like where you were in the suit? Was the head animatronic? Like, just give us the whole rundown of this thing.
Well, I can set the mood first by saying it was and still is the worst monster suit I've ever worn.
Wow.
Oh my God. It was so miserable. I hadn't done that many. What have we done? We had done that. We did the Gill Man, right?
Yeah.
The Gill Man. And
the Alien?
And I wasn't in the Alien at that time. Mm. And Pumpkinhead came before Leviathan. So mm-hmm. I guess the Gill Man and Pumpkinhead, which were both very, you know, simple in terms of what I had to wear, foam latex body suits, you know, over a Lycra, a spandex foundation. But because the Leviathan creature was so much bigger and so hunched over, I was basically sitting on a small, like an apple box inside with my knees tucked up. Mm. And then when I climbed inside the suit, we had an opening with zippers and Velcro. So I climbed inside the suit and I would slip on this harness, back harness that was attached to this carbon fiber, basically like a heavy duty plastic rod that arced up from the back of the suit over my shoulders and head, and then the head of the creature, big animatronic head, which was heavy, was attached to that rod. So the weight of the head came up across my back and then arced up over my head. And I don't remember what I was using for vision. I think I just had some slots cut in the neck of the creature so I could kind of get an idea of where I was. But it wasn't important because with the way I was just sitting with my knees tucked up, I couldn't really move the creature. It was always being towed by a cable or pushed in behind. But again, the worst part of the suit deal comes from it was something that was kind of unforeseen, that there's not a lot of, or at least I wasn't doing a lot of in and out time in the suit. You know, I would spend as many hours in the suit as I could so that we wouldn't take a 20-minute break to get me out of the suit only to find they now needed me and I had to take 20 minutes to get back in, so I'd stay suited up even in between work. But, oh my God, it was so miserable on my back by the end of the day. It's like I had to climb out and stretch out and then go through it all again the next day. I don't remember how many days I wore that suit. It just felt like too many.
Too many.
It was rough.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, just looking at it, you know, you can tell, like, that just must have been miserable.
And it's interesting now as I think about it. I wonder how much of that, it's like, you know, was that like the Jaws and the shark in Jaws that it wasn't really working on film, right? So they decided to cut around it. And to me, that was what made the movie work. And I think when people talk about the suspense in Leviathan, I think the suspense is there because you don't see the monster, you know, from head to toe in the first 5 minutes of the movie. And even the times when he's introduced into the story, you only catch glimpses of him. He's behind some kind of a wire screen wall or something where you don't get a full view. And he's moving sort of mysteriously.
Because
he couldn't move from point A to point B. But in the end, I think, I don't know if George, if he had been a more mobile creature, I wonder if George would have shown more of him or shown him more often, and that could have actually had a lessening of the impact.
I think I agree with you with that, because I don't like to see the monsters, you know, very much, or, you know, until the very end, and at the end, not even like that much, because your imagination is always going to fill in those gaps and be worse than anything you could see.
Oh my God. See, this is what I love about everybody at Fangoria and your fans. You guys get it. It's like, why don't you guys produce creature movies? Because we spend so much of our artistic energy explaining to producers, yes, this thing looks absolutely beautiful. Please don't show it.
Right.
Please please hide it. Or look, you know, you only get glimpses of it throughout the first, you know, the first two acts of the movie. And they go, oh, great, then it won't cost much. You go, no. But when you finally see it in the climax, it's got to look great. And they're scratching their heads, and they just don't get it. And it's hard. That makes the dream job hard to turn the time.
I totally agree, and you know, it's cool coming from you because you are a creature performer and you are advocating for that. You know, it's like
don't show me.
No, I think that's great, and I think the creature is most effective when the camera, you know, pans maybe like from its head to the human head inside of it, and then you're like, oh wow, shit, where did that human head come from?
Yeah, you know, right,
that's because, like, really weird.
Yeah, and I love that because that's suddenly the human head, that became the center of the creature. And I gotta say, the design of the Leviathan creature, I think it was all John Rosengrant.
We were busy on
a couple of things, right? We were up with a couple of things at the time, and I remember he went off and took a bunch of clay home one weekend and came back with this maquette that pretty much almost entirely blocked out, and it's gorgeous. And he did some research. He came up with some great fish head kind of stuff with these jaws that have a, you know, distended bone that come out to the side. John painted it, and it was a whole John Rosengrant creature built to destroy me from the inside.
Built to destroy you from the inside.
He hated me. He always said, "I'll kill you." So it was cool. But yes, it's cool because you look at that, you go, oh, Jesus, a monster. And then you look inside and you find that face. You go, oh, God, it's like tragic and pathos ridden. And there's a human being involved. I loved all that. I love the layers. You know, you pick apart the layers of the monster and reveal different things.
Yeah, I that was what was most effective for me. And then it really did scare me. You know, on top of it, you know, John Rosengrant it's beautiful. I think it is the most beautiful fish humanoid creature I've ever seen.
Oh my God! It completely blew away. It completely blew away. What was the other one I mentioned? It completely blew away the other fish movie. Deep Star Six. I also liked. I gotta say, as much as I liked the movie The Abyss, and I thought Steve Johnson's alien creatures were beautiful. It was a whole different tone. I can't compare. To me, it's not like comparing apples and apples.
Oh, no.
Like
they're apples and oranges, completely different.
So the work was beautiful, but I love the way the Leviathan creature looked. Like, you see the creature head, and then you see the human, and then you dig deeper, and you see me with my crybaby whining voice inside.
Get me
so
out!
So layer after layer. Exciting. Exciting stuff.
Well, thank you for going through that torture for our viewing pleasure, Tom. I think I speak for all of us, you know, all the Fangorians out there when we say thank you for suffering for our pleasure.
Shucks, it was nothing.
Let's talk about how Stan was actually the second unit director on this movie. And George wanted him in that role. And it seems like George was very trusting of Stan and you and the team to pull off these special effects shots. Can you talk about what it was like working with him?
Yeah, it was like, it was very much like Pumpkinhead, you know, when Stan was directing. Mm-hmm. There's something about, if you're into a creature film, it's great to have a director who understands creatures in terms of what works for the audience and what doesn't. It's not like, you know, the wrong side of that is a guy that just is into makeup effects for the blood and the spatter and the guts, and they'll come out and direct, and it'll be all about blood and guts and all that stuff, and there've been plenty of examples of that. Mm-hmm. But when you get somebody like Stan who understands story and understands character, and that's what movies are all about, in spite of what the creature effects might be or any other aspect of casting and music or anything, the story and the characters or what happened to make the story work, and Stan knew that. So he knew what to shoot and what to get out of the creature that would look good, you know, that he would take the time to set something up and to do the blocking of a scene so that we were never giving away more than we wanted the audience to see it. And that's what's great about controlling our stuff on set is when, you know, even a director that comes in is very excited to work with monsters as we have in the past, but that excitement doesn't resonate with just because you can show it doesn't mean you should show it.
Right.
So that's always the kind of a hard discussion to have on set. But it's better to manage expectations than for the movie to come out and have the critics, you know, see all the behind the scenes scenes and zippers and buckles and all that stuff.
Right. No, I think that was, you know, really smart on George Cosmatos' decision to just be like, hey, you guys know what you're doing, you know.
Well, and James Cameron did the same thing on Aliens. You know, he gave Stan quite a bit of second unit coverage to take care of with the queen and the eggs and the pig, you know, a lot of the space sort of stuff was, I mean, a lot of it was James Cameron, but there was also the elements of pacing and stuff that he just used for cutaways and things to kind of sweeten the whole scene. A lot of that was Stan.
Let's talk about the ending of Leviathan. So this was shot in a tank in Malta, right?
Right.
So there's a lot going on in this ending. What were some of the difficulties that you and the crew ran into besides just, you know, being generally miserable inside of the suit? But you guys were like in a tank, and I think everyone had to be trained as scuba divers, right?
Yeah, that was. There's always kind of little mixed blessings that go with it that always went along with doing this kind of work, particularly during the Stan Winston days. So we all got got certified together. It was always like a big, you know, field trip. to go off to the local pool and learn how to use a regulator and learn how to breathe through a mouthpiece and all that kind of stuff. And it was fun because when we got to Malta, we went off with some of the stunt people to an actual, you know, ocean dive spot and went and explored some underwater caves and some great stuff like that. So in the tank, even though you could stand up the tank, and I think the water was probably chest height, there was a lot of rigging and stuff we would have to do, and particularly with me inside the Leviathan creature, you know, God forbid if the thing fell over and I did not have a respirator on and I'd be stuck, you know, drowning. You know, it'd be like this dual feeling of, hey, it feels better, I can straighten up, but oh, I'm drowning.
I'm drowning.
I'm drowning. Shucks, I'm drowning. So yeah. That was cool. And the other funny thing, you know, at Stan's, we got to know the cast pretty well, and Ernie Hudson was a particular favorite. And Ernie had not learned to swim.
Oh.
He had learned to bust ghosts, but not to swim. So he was very wary. And it was funny because at the end of the picture, the Leviathan creature has to kill him. So Ernie's out there in the water, and I'm in this big clumsy suit where, you know, it's like, oh, I can't be real pinpointy with my moves. So bear with me, Ernie, when I come down on top of you. Just take a big mouthful of air, and I'll get off of you as soon as I can, and you can get back to the surface. And that's the actor's realism that Ernie was able to generate on screen.
Wow. And poor Ernie, I think his death is like so anticlimactic too. It's like, oh man, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny. Wow. So Tom, for the explosions and everything in the ending scene, how was that done? Was that done in the tank, or is that post-production, a combination?
Oh my God. You're talking to the wrong person. I'm inside this stupid suit, right? And it's like, I don't know, you know, you just hear people mumbling out there and hey, are you okay in here for a few minutes? Yeah. And you hear people swim away and you hear some explosions and yeah, I have no idea how close this stuff is or if it's even happening if I'm on screen. It's like, you hear stuff, you think, well, maybe if the camera's in this direction, I should wave my arms and move around a little bit. it's tough being alone in a tank in Malta.
Wow. So I guess when you finally did see the movie, I guess a lot of things were a surprise to you.
Yeah. Hey, Peter Weller's in this movie. I didn't know that.
But for real, when you did see it, what did you think?
It was a rough shoot. I felt around that time it was the roughest thing we had done, and we hadn't done that many. And there were times I thought, oh, this is kind of jumpy and hectic when it all goes together. But it did, you know. I don't know who the editor was, but the person did a great job. I'm not taking anything away from George as the director and putting something together that made sense. I was pretty pleased with it. I don't think it did well. I don't think people fell in love with it. It wasn't. It's hard coming off of Terminator and Aliens, right. and then seeing, well, what can we do with Leviathan?
It's hard to top those two movies. Anyone would be hard. But yeah, I mean, I love Leviathan. I think it's a fun movie. I really appreciate the creature effects in the movie and the other special effects that go on. And you, just knowing that you went through, you know, such hell and darkness inside of this massive fish humanoid creature, it makes me really appreciate the movie even more. And as a creature performer, I'd love to know, if someone was interested in becoming a creature performer, what guidance would you give them?
This is where it was like, oh my God, you're such an old man. But my guidance is, get a daytime job, because it's not like creature suit performing is a full-time career. Right. I have the benefit of you know, working and working for Sam and doing a lot of the artwork and then moving into design and then running the shop with Alec when we left Stan. That was my day job. So it was very easy to be available and be ready to be able to do creature suit stuff, which I love doing because it's performing and it's acting and it's, it was very, I loved it, right? I loved the last step of a creature build, is to make sure he moves right on set.
Right.
But that's the big thing. It's tough. There's not a lot of work. There's not a lot of opportunities, particularly with CGI eating up a lot of that. Although probably the light at the end of the tunnel would be, if you're a great body performer, there's always the option of trying to work your way into doing motion capture stuff for CGI. I mean, I've seen some of the, well, obviously Andy Serkis is the guy to look to in terms of the real path to glory, because he did great work and he knew exactly how to do it. And you can see him and his performance in everything he does, particularly I thought the last Planet of the Apes movie was just absolutely gorgeous in terms of the characters of the apes and their reality on screen.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, does such a great job with that. And you're right, you know, you should get a day job. But there are, you know, avenues out there, you know, and it may not be, you know, like the 80s where it was mostly like you in a suit, specifically you.
If it was the 80s, I would be directing. It seemed like it was so easy in the 80s, right? If you have a monster shop in the 80s, you too can become a director. yeah. And I just didn't latch on to that. I'm taking the long, hard road because I just didn't latch on to it when I could have, when I should have.
Well, I mean, you're doing great work at Studio ADI. I follow you guys on YouTube. I spend countless hours going down black holes watching your videos. like so many hours on Studio ADI's YouTube page. If you haven't checked it out.
That is the beauty. That is the beauty of our YouTube. No, YouTube channel. It just sucks the life and time out of people.
It just sucks the life and time. I mean, in a good way. I've learned so much. But I'd love to know, like, what are you excited about working on right now? And what are you doing? And, you know, just tell us about some of the projects you're involved with.
The last thing that we had come out, it was interesting. We did some designs. Well, we did the design for Rodan in Godzilla King of the Monsters that came out a couple months ago in March.
Oh, yeah.
Came out in March, and that was new and that was exciting for us because it was all digital, and Legendary Pictures knew that they weren't going to be doing any kind of a practical thing, not even so much as an oversized, you know, arm for anything.
Oh, wow.
So it was nice to be able to be on their radar and have them turn to us. And a lot of that came from, we had this kind of long ongoing thing with Michael Dougherty trying to get onto his films ever since we had met years and years ago in Vancouver on different shows. And he just loves monsters and he loves practical effects, but he certainly has shown that he loves monsters more than just practical effects because he can make it work in digital. So he wanted us on board to do Rodan, and we did that. And then right after that, Legendary came back to us and we designed some creatures for Godzilla versus King Kong that's still in production.
Ooh.
So I can talk about it, but it's still exciting, you know, to be able to work in the practical field, but also provide the heart and soul of creature designs in terms of designs for digital.
That's great. And that's really what I love about what you guys do at Studio ADI, because, you know, it is like the heart and soul, like of practical effects, but you're also, you know, into the digital realm and not afraid of it. You know, I think some some people would, you know, there's always that argument, practical versus digital. It's like, guys, you know, digital is used even in the most practical films that you watch. And I think that is really cool that you guys just know how to make a creature in whatever realm. I am the creature feature girl on the Fangoria staff, so that's my bag. So it's really cool to talk to you. And I have one more question for you, and it is our Class of 89 extra credit question. If you could go back in time 30 years ago, what advice would you give yourself, either in regards to Leviathan or about life in general?
This is Fangoria asking me, what would I say to a younger Tom Lucas about life in general?
Yes.
It's such a romanticized question. I can't get my head around it because I want to say, what do I say? Like, I am so happy with the way my life has turned out so far. And you know, knock on wood, that something doesn't suddenly go south on me. I'm happy with the way things are charted and the way things are happening. So what do? I go back to that. I know you don't know me, but just stay on this path. Everything you're doing is just going to work out fine. But see, the problem is then it's the butterfly effect, right? Because then my 30-year younger self would go, oh, great. Maybe I don't have to work so hard now if everything's going to work out.
True.
So I wouldn't want to be in that position. I would say if anybody comes to you in the future with a Leviathan creature, make sure that you can straighten out your back in between shots. That's as far as I would go. I would do that.
Well, I think that would be good advice and probably wouldn't affect your future. I actually lied about that. Was my last question for you, Tom. Well, this isn't even a question, but just for old time's sake, I want to see if you can give me your best Peter Weller impression from Leviathan, and you know what I mean.
Oh, you know what? See, if I do it, to make it work, it's a visual. I'm going to try it. I'm not good at doing voices, but it's the visual, right? So you have to picture we're in the tank, right? The tank in Malta,
right,
and the tank is built. It's like an infinity pool, giant infinity pool, but it sits right on the ocean, so it looks like the tank just runs right in the ocean. So you can stand up and the water will be at your chest level, right? So at the end of the movie, Peter's got, what is it, like a stick of dynamite or some kind of explosive or something, right? And I think Peter came up with this line himself. He tried a few lines, you know, say, ah, motherfucker, and he throws this thing. See, that's my best Peter Weller. But what makes it worse is if you picture a guy, you know, who is ostensibly out in the open ocean, bobbing up and down with the water up to his shoulders, all of a sudden he's able to jump up in the air.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what is he doing? What is he launching himself off the head of a sperm whale that just happened to be cruising by? But that made me laugh. That still makes me laugh. That takes the edge off my terrible Peter Weller voice.
No, I love it. I thought your impression was great. And I will always imagine a sperm whale lifting Peter Weller up out of the ocean scene now.
That very popular children's book, Peter and the Sperm Whale.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome, Tom. Well, Liz, it's been such a blast to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your memories on working on Leviathan with us and being that incredible fish humanoid creature.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Natasha. This has been fun.
It's growing. It's had a meal.
It needs blood?
Apparently.
That's just great. You're telling me we got a goddamn Dracula in here with us?
That's why the one on the ship was dead and needed blood.
Wait a minute. What one on that ship?
Somebody want to let the rank and file in on your little secret?
Whatever it is, it appears to be a genetic aberration.
No shit.
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 89. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 89 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pacetta, executive producers Dallas Saunier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safa-Vimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pacetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Minardi, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.